Hi, my name is Mark Borsma, and I'm interviewing Jean Galanka. Her maiden name was Fowley, and her father's name was Charles Fowley, and her mother's name was Nora Hione. Her birth date was the 20th of 2004, 1926, and she was born in Athabasca, Alberta. And her spouse's name, it's Thomas Galanka, was her spouse. And you can just start wherever you'd like to tell me about what how life was. Where were you? You were born in Athabasca here?
I was born here in Athabasca. My mother remembers that the trees were out in leaf and the robins were singing. We lived in a house which has since been demolished, but would have been about 2.5 blocks north of the river on 49th Street. My father was very annoyed when he came home one day in October of 19, well, no, it would have been November of 1926, to find that my mother had put me outside to sleep and the temperature registered down at the Union Hotel at minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh my goodness.
Mrs. Nanskoville and her family were living just next door, and the Nanskoville girls used to come over and spend lots of time with me. The Danu family lived just across the street. We didn't have a well on our property, and not too many people did, but south towards what is presently the high school hill, the Chapin family lived, and we got water there out of a well. It had a rope and a pail and a pulley, and that was how we got our drinking water and water for cooking. But also I remember there were 2 rain barrels at the side of the house where we caught rainwater, and that's what my mom used for washing when it was available, and melted snow in the wintertime.
Sure, yeah.
My mom was a great tennis player. The tennis court at that time was where the apartment block stands now, that is just kitty corner to the burger bar. The Cliff Hitz was one of the gentlemen living here in town at that time. He was a carpenter, but he also loved to play tennis, so whenever available he would get in touch with my mother and they would have a game of tennis. And then when they had a tournament, they played as partners. As I was about maybe the time I'd be 3, 4, and 5, the Sunday ritual for me was for my dad to take me down to Charlie Marchand's cafe, or it was known as the Royal Cafe later, and it still stands there today, in order to buy 5 cents worth of maple buds, or as I call them, chalky buds. Now, at that time, Athabasca didn't have any cement walks. They were wooden sidewalks. And if any of you are familiar with wooden sidewalks, you know that there's about half to a three-quarter inch space between the boards. Well, I'd been told to hold on to my money, but one day I was playing with it, and guess what? My nickel went down one of those cracks.
Oh.
There were tears, and I think my father was trying to teach me a lesson, and he said, well, I guess there's no chalky buds today.
Yeah.
I don't remember the outcome. I would suspect that, being my dad, he probably relented and got me some. During this time in Athabasca, my favorite playmate who lived down the street in the house directly next to where the United Church manse would be, but it's not anymore. That house at one time was a two-story house, and the Davy Jones family lived there. And they had a daughter named Cecil. And Cecil and I used to play together all the time. Now, at this time, diphtheria was still common. We didn't have an immunization for it. And just down the street, a little girl, I can't remember her first name, but her surname was Cawthorpe, got diphtheria. They put her into quarantine, which was a building which the nurses also used as a residence, and it would have been right to the north of where the present Legion is. Now, Mrs. Jones, Cecil's mother, and my mother told us that we had to stay away from there. And so I can remember when I went to Cecil's to play, by this time we had moved and we were living in the house which is now directly to the west of the Olbrecht School. It's still, the residence still stands there. So I'd go out the door, I'd go in behind the old brick school, walk as far as I could through the schoolyard, and then come out down the block. I don't know whether I thought that was going to protect me or not, but that's how we did it. Blueberries were something that everybody picked in those days, and you didn't have to go very far. All you had to do was go across the river on the ferry, up the hill, and there the blueberries were.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we would come back and come home again on the ferry. At that time, the person who my mother liked to pick blueberries with was Mrs. Philip King. And they had a son called Don. So I have a picture of Don and I sitting in front of the blueberry pails.
So were the blueberries for jam or just for eating?
Mostly they were canned and we used them as fruit in the wintertime.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mom would can maybe 20, 30 quarts of them.
Well, that must have been just awesome.
Well,
good tasting stuff.
They were good. They were good. Mum was also a very good friend of Mrs. Verno. Mrs. Verno was a lady who was a teacher of, she was of Scottish background, but she also spoke fluent French. Her husband was the barber down at the Union Hotel. They had two children, Joe and Marilyn. Marilyn and I were the same age. Each of us had a little red wagon. So our mothers decided that they would take us and go and get some sand in our wagon so we could have a sandbox. And it seems rather ironic because where we went for the sand was up what is now the hill to the high school. And at that time, there were no buildings up here whatever. There was a sort of a, well, to me, I thought it was a lake, but I realize now it was only a slough. And we came and filled our wagons with sand. And this is the ironic part. It's where my house presently stands.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. When we first bought this lot here, there were still some cattails growing here.
Oh, yeah. So you've been in this house for a long time?
I've been in this house since 1966.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now, I now have a word I can say, but I don't know how to spell it.
So you've been in this house for 50 years.
Yes. At that time, Mr. Charles Parker Sr. had a store directly across from where CIBC is now to the north. And the downstairs part was the store, and the upstairs was a what we called Parker's Hall. And that's where all the social events took place. One of the things that I can vaguely remember, because I would have been about five at the time, was that one of the Kier boys, who came from the South Athabasca area, used to put on what they called a Chautauqua show. And what I can remember is that he had a series of these marionette dolls that you worked with strings, and of course they would tell a little story. And apparently I was very intrigued with them, because I'm told that I left my seat and I walked up and stood right underneath the stage and stared at these dolls. During those times, Mickey McIntosh used to fly his plane down from Calling Lake and other lakes up in the area, but I remember them talking of Calling Lake, and he would have fish. And so when this would be during the winter time, he'd come down and land on the ice of the river, and the ladies, when they knew he was coming, would all be down there in order to buy some fish.
Wow, that's interesting.
Our radios at that time were with a wet battery, and we used earphones. And there were only two sets of earphones for the set that we had at home. So my mother had one set, my dad would have the other, but I would sit on my dad's knee and snuggle up nice and close. And of course I could hear too what was being played. Now, we didn't watch the radio very long at a time, because the wet battery only lasted so long, and then you had to take it off and take it down to one of the garages, and they would charge it up again, and then you'd carry your battery home. And
I never heard of a wet battery before.
And then
how big was that? Like a normal
Well, actually,
size,
it's a battery very much like we have in our cars today.
Okay.
And most of them came with a sort of a fixture around them that you could hook on a piece of rope and carry them. You had to be very careful, because there was acid, and you could get burnt with the acid in them.
Right, right.
I think all early Athabascans probably remember the parrot that used to be in the telegraph office. Uh-huh. A parrot could talk. And we won't say some of the words he used to say.
Oh, my goodness.
When, in 1929 was when the Depression hit here in Athabasca and all over the Canada and the world, too, I guess. So my father had a homestead out about 10 miles east of Colinton. And because Mr. Alec MacLeod no longer could afford to keep him as a clerk at the store, we moved out to the farm. So I started school in 1932 at a school known as Plum Lake. And I couldn't go to school all year, because in order to get to school by a dry road, it was 7 miles. But if we could go, once it froze up, we could go across Kinnikinnick Lake, and it was about 3 miles to school. So I went to school for 4 months the first winter.
And you could probably walk those 3 miles, could you, or not? Did they have transportation?
No, there was no transportation, but my dad and a neighbor made sort of a toboggan. And so they would take this other gentleman's daughter, who was Jean Grimshaw, and I, they would take us across the lake and then let us walk about the last mile and a half. The next winter, the Grimshaws had left the area, and I only got to school 3 months. Well, at this point, my dad decided that this was no way to get a child educated. So, looking around at the nook and at Boyle and at Colinton, he decided that he should try to go into business. So with $500, that was after we sold most everything, we went into partnership with a Mr. Clarence Tade in Colinton. And for the next 20 years, that was the home of the Fowleys.
And what business did he open?
Now that's a good question. It was a general store. And by a general store, we sold groceries. We sold dry goods, all lines of clothing. We sold hardware, nails, bolts, haywire, anything you could name. We had a gas pump out in front, and we also sold coal oil and high-test gas for lamps. My father became the agency for the Treasury branch. He sold driver's licenses. He was the insurance agent for the Alberta Crop and Hail Insurance. We took, farmers brought cream in cream cans, what was put in our cellar. And in the morning, my father would get up about 5:30 and get those cans of cream over to the station in order to meet the train 3 times a week, which went from Edmonton to Athabasca.
Oh, that's interesting.
A train came from Edmonton to Athabasca Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and went back on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays. Sometimes there were extra trains. One of the interesting things that I remember about the train was that about a mile, a little better than a mile north of Colinton, on the track, there was what they called the Y, and that was where the train engine turned around and pushed the train into Athabasca so that the engine would be facing the right way in order to take the train back the next morning into Edmonton.
Oh, that's interesting.
I took my grades 3 to 11 in Colinton, and that was during the war years. During those war years, perhaps I should back up just a bit before the war years.
I was going to say, why don't you tell me a little bit more about the school? Like, how many kids were in your class? Were there boys and girls?
Okay. Colinton School was a two-room school.
Okay.
Grades 1 to 6 were in one room, and grades 7 to 11 were in the senior room.
So two teachers then, probably.
There were two teachers. When I came to Colinton, I'd only been in school 7 months, but I was 8 years old. And when you're 8 years old, you should be in grade 3.
Right.
So they put me in grade 3. That was an interesting year.
That must have been quite a struggle.
Well, the grade 3 class at that particular year, it diminished greatly after that, but there were 19 of us in there. And at that time, they used to put your standing in class. And I was 19 to start with. But I wasn't 19 by the end of the year. With the help of my father, we struggled every night, and I managed to catch up what I didn't know. And
your dad was a big sport to you.
Oh, yes, very much so. Well, he certainly believed in education. School years were fun years. Almost every night, didn't matter what season of the year, the kids that lived in town would gather in front of the hotel in Colinton, and we'd decide what game we were going to play. It might have been hide and seek, it might have been anti-anti-I-over, it might have been Red Rover, whatever it would be. And we would play from about 7 o'clock until the bus came in about 8. And then that was sort of our curfew. We knew then that once the bus was in, we had to go home.
Mm-hmm.
In the wintertime, they had a skating rink, and of course it was natural ice. Colinton and Athabasca had a real, well, I guess, what would you call it? Can't think of the word I want to say. Anyway, we both had good hockey teams, and there was, I guess the word is rivalry that I'm looking for.
Okay.
There was really good rivalry, and our teacher, the senior teacher, Mr. Roxburgh, was a very good hockey player.
So did you play hockey too?
No, girls. All girls did not play hockey in those days. That was unheard of. Only the boys played hockey.
Mm-hmm. So what did the girls do?
You went and watched and cheered them on.
Yeah.
Mind you, we skated, although I never... Times were hard, and while we made a success of the store, there wasn't money for extra things, so I never had a pair of skates.
Right.
Never had a bicycle.
Right.
I only had my little red wagon.
Yeah.
But...
So I bet that school was heated with stoves too, right? Firewood? Or...
We were very fortunate in that school because they had already installed a furnace. But the furnace burnt wood.
Oh.
So... In the fall, different farmers would bring in loads of wood, and it would be piled out behind the school. And that reminds me of another incident. We girls, it was usually in the spring, sometimes in the summer, but usually the spring, we'd like to play horse. And so what we would do at that time... A man by the name of Mr. Pete Quilly used to deliver bread from the city to all the stores between Edmonton and Athabasca. And when he would deliver it, he would have it in boxes, and it was tied with an eighth of an inch twine.
Okay.
And I would save all that twine, and then we girls would braid that together. And then that made our lines and things in order for us to play horse. Well, one day with this, we decided that the wood pile, that would make a pretty good barn. So we took the wood pile apart and made it all into stalls and so on. And we had a great time playing out there. But we were still in the junior room, and when the principal of the school went out and saw it, he made us go out. We had to repile all the wood pile.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I wonder what the purpose of that was.
Well...
It couldn't hurt the wood.
The only thing is, the wood kept drier when it was properly piled.
Oh, okay.
And
more
of course,
air would get to it.
And if it was scattered around. And it was, I guess, a hazard, too, because anybody could have tripped over it and whatnot. But anyway, it was fun. Another interesting thing in those days in Colinton, this was pre-war, there were a band of gypsies that used to come once a year through Colinton and make their way up to Lac La Biche. They'd stay for part of the summer, not too long as I remember, and then they would make their way back again. And at that time, unfortunately, although we did not find them to be that way, gypsies were people that you were supposed to watch because they were supposedly light-fingered, and some of your property might disappear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that just no longer happens. It's something of the past.
Mm-hmm.
During the war years, all the Alaska highway traffic came on the old number 2 highway, which made its way through every little town. Between Athabasca and Manuk, there were 13 bridges crossing over little, sometimes creeks, and sometimes it was just that it was easier, I guess, to build a bridge than to fill in the road to make it smooth.
Sure.
As the convoys came through, sometimes at Colleton, if you were wishing to get onto the highway to come to Athabasca, you'd have to sit and wait 15 minutes while the convoy went through. You couldn't get labor during the war, so I stayed an extra year in Colleton and took an extra year of schooling. In the high school, because you were grades 7 to 11 in the one room, you were not allowed to take a full year's high school. The teacher just couldn't possibly cope with all of it. So we were restricted to taking about what at that time was known as 25 credits. You had to have 35 credits for a full year. So I stayed an extra year in high school and took an extra 25 credits before I went to Alberta College to take my grade 12.
Right. Was that mandatory at that time?
To have
the full 35 credits?
Well, in order to complete your high school, you had to have 105 credits.
105.
3 years at 35 credits a year.
Right.
And then you had to take certain courses in order for senior matric, which I think is still part of the high school curriculum today.
Yes, I think so.
And
too.
Fortunately, I took them, so I had no trouble getting into university to take my teacher training.
That's pretty good. You caught up fast.
Well, from where I started, yes.
Yeah.
After taking it at 1944 was when I was ready to start my first year of university. The war was still on, but in the spring, of course, the war was over, and what a celebration that was. But those of us who were at university were called war emergency students. Some went in and took 6 weeks training and came out to teach. Others of us stayed this full university year of 7 months and then came out to teach. I stayed the full 7 months, excuse me. My first 2 months of teaching were out at Rogers Chapter, which was, because it no longer exists, about 10 miles out of Athabasca. At that school, I did not have too many students because that school had been closed and some new families had moved into the district, and so there were enough students who had been sort of sent to other schools to reopen that school. So it was an interesting couple of months for me.
I'm sure. And how many kids would you have had in your first class?
I had about 14 or 15 only, which was...
That's not too bad.
Which wasn't bad to start with.
Yeah.
And it was just on the edge of the Amber Valley settlement.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Some of my students were black.
Right.
And... some had been going to two other schools. So it was kind of interesting getting us all back together again.
Yeah.
But it was good.
Did you find any racism going on out there at that
time? No, racism didn't. No, not, it didn't.
Didn't enter the picture, eh?
Not with the children. I don't know whether, to my knowledge, Amber Valley was a community where I'll say white and black intermingled really very, very well.
Okay. Cool.
A number of the people from Amber Valley dealt in our general store in Colleton, so I knew all the families, so it was not really a new experience for me at all.
Right. So what subjects did you teach in school? There's a tough one, eh?
Well,
you must have done math.
No, just a minute. Okay. When you went out to teach, I had grades 1 to 8 that first. So you taught every subject in grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, grade 4, grade 5, grade 6.
Oh my goodness.
You taught math, you taught reading, you taught language, you taught social studies, you taught science. You were supposed to do a little bit of music, supposed to do a little bit of art. You also were encouraged that you should get them out for some phys ed.
Yeah, and now phys ed is mandatory, I'm pretty sure.
I believe it is.
And art is an option.
That's right.
Which I liked. And what was the one you said before that?
Music.
Music, yeah. So what did you do for music? Did you have a piano or
no,
recorders?
No, about
or?
All, we had recorders, and how I hated those things. But at least I was able to probably get somewhere near the right note to start a song on.
Right.
And you did some rhythm work, and we tried to do a little bit of singing dances and that.
Right.
But that was the way it was. My second year of teaching, I went out to South Athabasca to teach.
Oh, okay.
And that was also a rural school.
Okay. A bigger school?
Yes, I had over 20 in that school, but
okay.
Still the same grades. And the next year, I was planning on going back to South Athabasca as far as I knew, but the middle of August, I got a phone call from the superintendent saying that there'd been some changes here in the Athabasca school and there was no primary teacher, and he was assigning me to teach grade 1 here in Athabasca.
Just grade 1 by itself?
Just grade 1 by itself.
Oh, so Athabasca must have been growing at that time.
It was starting to.
Yeah.
I did not expect, though, what happened, nor did anybody else. I started out with about 38 in grade 1, and very soon we started mushrooming.
Wow, that's a lot.
And by January, there were 47 in grade 1.
Wow, that's too much for one teacher.
And the grade 2 class had either 42 or 43. So they had built a shop for the high school students to start being able to take shop courses down where the present outreach school is.
Okay.
And they did some work and turned the upper floor of the shop into a school classroom. You can imagine how noisy that it must have been. I didn't teach up there, but I know. And so the grade 2 class and my class each had some students taken out of it. I think I ended up with 32 in the end.
Still, that's a lot of kids to teach.
Well, that was the norm in those days.
Yeah.
You were expected to have 30, 32, 35.
I think 30 is probably pretty normal for now. At least in Athabasca, about 30 per class.
Well,
in
the junior grades, it's much less than that.
Yeah.
But in the high school, it does get up to that.
Right.
Now, when I first came here to teach in Athabasca, there was no plumbing in the school.
Oh.
And so we had little shacks out behind.
Yep.
And the same thing with the teachers who went down by the shop to teach. They had the same circumstances to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
School continued with grades of one grade in each room for those 4 years that I taught here the first time. By then, they were realizing that they had to do something, so the first 4 rooms were built up at where the present high school is. We call them the chicken coop because they had all those windows up high, and they're still there today.
Mm-hmm.
But that part of the school was the chicken coop. Because before that, we had classrooms all over town. There were classes in the Roman Catholic Church. There were classes in the United Church.
A good use of resources that are already there.
Well, that's all they could do.
Sure.
And then they brought in, this time, centralization had started. So they brought in 2 schools from out in the country. one of them was West Athabasca, which I did teach in, is the where the school is now that they are setting aside as a sort of a pioneer resource. I don't know just what they're calling it. It's down there beside the outreach school. Well, right, if you go just north of the outreach school, there is an old schoolhouse. And that was West Athabasca.
And it still has a sign. It's still there, isn't it? And it has a sign on it that says it was the oldest old schoolhouse. I remember
and
seeing
there's
that.
The old desks in there and a lot of the old books and things like that.
I didn't know you could get in there. But
It's open at certain times of the year. Huh. They will open it. But when I taught in it, it was right where the present outreach school is. And they built a sort of an adjoining hallway to the second school that they brought in. I had a grade one class in West Athabasca, and Doris Allen had a grade two class in just to the east of me in the next room. Rather interesting that year. At that time, the beaver had not been reintroduced to any extent into this community because they had been all trapped out. But Mr. Champion was the fellow who dealt with wildlife and whatnot. And his son was in my room, his son Donald. And so in the spring, they had captured and trapped, live trapped, some female beaver with their young. And so this one morning before he took these out across the river to put them into wherever he was putting them, he brought them over to the school, and we all went out and had a look at this female beaver, the mother beaver, and she had these two little beaver, little kits or whatever they called them. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you call little beaver.
I'm not sure either.
I don't know Cowboys either.
Maybe. Yeah.
But it was the first time that I had ever seen a beaver. And of course, naturally, it was the first time that all the kids had ever seen a beaver.
That must have been fascinating. Yeah.
Well, it's something you remember.
Yeah, because I'm guessing you had textbooks when you were in school.
Yes, by this time we had readers for the elementary students. Of course, the high school and that had their textbooks.
Yeah.
But there were no science books or anything like that for the elementary grades. The teacher had a guide, and you just worked from that.
Right.
And we had the readers. We had, by that time, it was the Dick and Jane series.
Okay.
And we had the workbooks that went with it. So we thought we were pretty fortunate.
Yeah. So there were pictures actually in those books.
Oh, very interesting pictures. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Cool.
Dick and Jane and Sally and Spot. And,
yeah.
Oh, yes. Those in 1947-48, when I came to Athabasca to teach, the immigration hall was still here. And it was bigger than Parker's Hall, so that is where the the high school graduations were held. The teachers were responsible for getting all the decorations and whatnot up, and we also, believe it or not, made the certificates that were given to the high school students.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we sat. And with some help from some of the parents from the home and school.
And
very, very active home and schools.
And of course, you wouldn't have had a computer to make it on.
Oh, no, it was all
so
handwork.
It was all hand done with
all
rulers
hand done.
And,
yes.
And ink and.
Yep, all like done that. With the black Waterman's ink.
And that's ink in a bottle, not on a.
Ink
in
a bottle. Right?
Yeah.
And the wide felt, the wide nib in order to do a little bit of, well, not really calligraphy, but sort of a form of calligraphy to say their names and then the name of the school and so on.
Yeah, cool.
I taught here for 4 years until June of 1951, And then we moved out to Bickerdike, and that's where my oldest son was born. Within the year, we were back in Perryvale, and we were I was not in, looking, expecting to teach, but I think I was in Perryvale about 5 days when the superintendent of schools came and said, "We're badly in need of teachers. Will you come back and start teaching in September?" And I said, "Well, I can't really." I said, "I have a little baby here, 7 months old. We'll get you a babysitter."
Oh, they were desperate, were they?
Well, at that time, yeah, we're still desperate for teachers. So in September of 1952, started back teaching at Perryvale. Hopefully it was going to be in the primary grades, but circumstances worked out that I ended up getting the grade 7 and 8 room of 32 students. And I wondered how I was going to cope with that.
I was thinking, having taught both grade 4, I've taught grade 4 to both grade 12, different things. And the junior highs are definitely the most challenging, I think, in my experience.
Well, yes, I would say so. But I look back on those years very, very fondly. They proved to be very, very rewarding years.
Yeah.
And I'm still friends with a great many of those students that I had back at that time. In fact, the Perryvale reunions, we go back and we work together to put them together. So they were good years. No skating rink or anything at the schools in those days. So my husband fixed up a little engine, and we were able to flood the creek down.
Like a water pump.
Yeah, water pump, yeah.
Okay.
Down by the railway tracks. And so phys ed in the wintertime was, we ate our lunch at recess and then went skating at noon hour down on the creek, or skating rink as we called it.
Right.
And then sometimes we were maybe 5 or 10 minutes late getting back.
Uh-huh.
But at least we had some outdoor phys ed.
Yeah, probably depending on how nice the weather was, how long you stayed out there, eh?
Well, nice on day. Real cold days, you couldn't go down, but if it was a decent day, we would go down, yes.
Yeah.
Those were the days when I was at Perryvale, teaching grade 7 and 8, when Christmas concerts were still all of the rage.
Right.
At that time, Perryvale was a 4-room school, and the hall was probably from about twice as far from my house here to the high school, about a quarter of a mile maybe from the school. So down we'd all walk and practice for 2 times in the hall before the actual night of the concert.
Right.
And in those days it was common that a Christmas concert would be held, say, one night. Perryvale would plan their concert. Rochester would plan theirs for another night. Collinton would plan theirs for another night. And often parents would go from school to school.
Sure.
That used to be what happened too when that year I taught at South Athabasca. You had your Christmas concert and people came from all the districts that were close around. And they were good. They would bring gifts if they brought their children, they would bring a little gift. And then every child got a gift and a bag of candy.
Oh, nice.
And then afterwards, usually the Christmas concert ended with the ladies would bring lunch, and we'd have lunch, and then there'd be a dance.
Right.
And that was a
big social event.
It was a big social event. And
sure.
Yeah, that was, but that happens no more. After teaching 14 years in Perryvale, we built our home here in 1966 in Athabasca. And I came back here I better backtrack a little bit. I taught 4 years of grade 7 and 8 in Perryvale, and then I taught the grade 1 and 2 class for the next few years, and the last year was in Perryvale. the school was almost shutting down, and I had grade 4, 5, and 6 and had to act as the principal as well.
Oh.
That was another experience.
I'm sure.
So in 1966, we moved back up here to Athabasca, and by that time, the Athabasca school had grown considerably. I should backtrack once more. The last year I was in Perryville, Athabasca school here was absolutely overcrowded. They were in the process of building what is now, what do they call it? The Athabasca Elementary School.
LTIS?
LTIS, Landing Trail, yes. However, contractor and the builder didn't get the school finished on time.
Oh.
So when school was ready to start in September, they had about 100 children that they had no place to put them.
Right.
So, strange as it may seem, the country kids were all bused in here to Athabasca.
Right.
But 4 rooms of town children, 2 rooms were bused to Colinton, and 2 rooms were bused to Perryville.
Hmm.
In Perryville, we had a grade 5 and a grade 6 room. Mrs. Pat Hunter had the grade 5 room, and Mrs. Anita Elgert had the grade 6 room. They rode the bus with the children. Now, there was a good deal of parental opposition by the parents here in Athabasca that their children had to leave town and go to Perryville.
Sure.
However, it worked out that the children thought it was great because at that point they had never had the use of a gym and so on.
Oh, okay.
Because they built a gym here, but they only were able to use it a very short time when they had to change the gym into 2 classrooms
in order
to accommodate the overflow.
Right.
Well, anyway, by 1966, the end of 1966, ready to start September of 66, they had got the LTIS school ready. But then disaster struck up there too. 2 rooms decided to fall off. And the grade 5 and 6 class were able to roll a ball from one room to the other. So they declared that it was totally unsafe.
I guess, yeah.
And so they had to tear down those 2 rooms. But that was part of the history of LTIS. Only in those days, it was AES, Athabasca Elementary School, and we were known as the AES Chipmunks. We had it on our hats and our sweatshirts.
And probably a team mascot or anything?
It was we didn't have a mascot. We were there were all kinds of chipmunks around the schoolyard.
Sure.
Yeah, they just lived there.
Did you have, were there sports teams from the different areas? Like, did they play hockey against each other?
No, not in that time. No, we had a track meet every spring, but that was the only inter-game thing there would be. But that was only to sort of accommodate the Calling Lake School would come in, and the children from the Hutterite Colony would come in sometimes.
Right.
Not always, and join us.
So what kind of things did you do at a track meet? Oh, I'm going to make you work for it.
Long jump, short jump, all kinds of different forms of racing, pole vaulting. That would be... The younger kids would throw bean bags. And of course the highlight was always that the ladies always had a hot dog stand at noon, and nobody brought lunch that day. Mind you, there were an odd few children who would have to bring their lunch, but most of them all were able to have hot dogs and pop. No ice cream, just hot dogs and pop. And I think they had softball games up on the top part in the afternoon, but that was only for the older ones.
Right.
And then another, there were a lot of relay races, and the children enjoyed those. My, that was hard to teach the young ones, though, how to do a relay race.
Mm-hmm.
You can... The stick was dropped
direction.
More than... The baton was dropped more than it was carried sometimes. It was when I came back in 1966 to teach here, up to this point, the women always had to wear dresses and skirts and suits. However, we had a man and wife come to teach here, and the gentleman, Mr. Edwards, went to the high school, and his wife, Betty, came down to teach at the elementary school. It was at the point that ladies' pantsuits were just beginning to come into fashion. So Betty Edwards arrived in a pantsuit at school one day, and we were all horrified.
Is that right?
Well, this just wasn't the thing to do. Well, she said that it was being done in the city schools,
yeah,
and we had heard that it was being done in other schools. So somebody went to the superintendent and said, you know, would you allow the lady teachers to wear pantsuits?
Yeah.
He said, yes. He said, you can wear pantsuits, but they must be pantsuits. They cannot just be slacks and a blouse.
Right.
They must be pantsuits.
Right.
So guess what? When convention came in October of that year, what
shopping.
All of us did, just about every lady teacher came back with a pantsuit.
Yeah, yeah,
they were
funny.
In style, and they have been ever since.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And at that time, of course, the men were still all wearing suits to school. The casual way of dressing had not come into being yet.
Yeah.
I kept on teaching until I had completed 40 years in 1987. And I was 61 at that time, and I had three little grandchildren. So I went babysitting with three little grandchildren so their mother could come back to teaching.
Right.
And so now I've been retired for, 30 years. It'll be 30 years, the end of June.
40 years, that's aggressive.
30 years.
No.
I taught for 40, but I've been retired
for
now for 30, so...
Teaching for 40 years is quite an accomplishment.
Well, it...
I'm sure it was very challenging.
Challenging, but good years.
Yeah.
Good years, very good years, yeah. And it's interesting, once in a while, doesn't happen very often, but somebody that I had as a student... while I was still Miss Fowley, will meet me on the street. Miss Fowley, how are you?
And they recognize
me. Back
you,
to my maiden name,
that's
yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen too often, but once in a while it does. I think back then the classes were smaller and there was more of a closeness.
Yeah, a better connection to the students.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But, you see, while I was teaching at the elementary school, that's when we started in that we tried some team teaching. That was okay, but many of the teachers did not like it at all.
I wouldn't like it myself.
I didn't mind it. It was okay.
Yeah.
And then it got so in the grade one classes, what we did was that each one of us taught our own basic core subjects. But phys ed and art, science, and social studies. One teacher taught all the social studies to the four classes. We changed rooms. One taught science, one taught phys ed, and one taught art. And I took this. Taught the science.
So that at that time, the teachers were starting to get areas of specialty, eh?
It, that's right.
Specialize
yeah.
in different areas, yeah.
And you see, a lot of us had come out teaching with only 1 year of training. So we went, most of us went back. Not all, but a majority went back with evening credit courses and summer school and got our degrees.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Where now you come out with a degree.
Yes, yes. And how long was the degree?
4 years.
It was 4 years then, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And at that time, too, I mean, you specialized in your area because I know that school. I took early childhood education, but then sort of as a year minor, I took special education because I ended up over here when we didn't have special education teachers that I took special education classes to. And that was another very challenging thing. And those are the students who, to this day, they see you, they remember you.
Yeah.
And of course, the ones that I taught, you know, they're adults. They've got families of their own now. And of course, because I taught the lower grades for all those years, now they're all grown up. They come and speak. Well, you know, you can. There's something about them that, yes, you remember them, but okay, who is this that's now this?
Huge difference with the
girl. Oh, huge difference,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And in those first years when I was teaching, there was no kindergarten.
Mm.
So it was really interesting when the little ones first started to school. They hadn't had any kindergarten, you see, at all. No play school, no kindergarten.
Right. Right.
They came directly from home. And they were so shy.
Oh, I'm sure. They're probably terrified.
Not the town children so much, because they'd played around.
Yeah.
But the country children hadn't had that opportunity.
Right, right.
I still think, and maybe I'm wrong, that you put in your hours at school and you put in at least that much time again, or time and a half.
Yeah.
And sometimes twice.
Yeah.
Depending on what the load is.
Yeah, depending on what time of the year it's, because report cards would come around and I'd lose weekends, right? A couple weekends gone, just trying to do a good job on the report cards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the report cards seem to be something that administration liked to change. They used to change so often.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I think they were, you know, thinking that they were improving, and some did prove to be maybe an improvement. Others, no, we didn't have them very long.
No, they
they left.
Come
they,
and gone, eh?
Yeah.
So where did you meet your husband?
I was teaching here. He was working in came to work in Collington, and he was an avid curler, and so we met at the curling rink.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Cool. So how long have you been teaching for then?
My second year here in Athabasca.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm always interested in where people meet their spouses, because nowadays lots of people meet their spouses in university.
That is true.
Would you like to talk about your children at all? No, I want to know about Ron. I want to know what kind of kid Ron was, because I know him. And
well,
he's got such
a
deep voice, and he's so gentle. He's like the gentle giant, right?
And yet,
he's got that great big deep voice.
Well, I had two boys, Ron, who was born in 1951, and Dick, who was born in 1955. Both of them went to university. Ron chose, after some sort of hunting, chose education as his profession. Dick chose to work with Alberta Transportation. Both are now retired. Ron and Maxine don't have a family. They just have two Yorkie pups, which I think sometimes they're as much work or more than a family.
I imagine, yep.
And Dick and Paulette have my three precious grandchildren, Richie, who's presently working on his doctorate.
Wow.
A
doctorate in what?
Epidemiology.
Well, that's pretty good, because I'm a teacher like you, and I like Scrabble a lot, and I have no idea what that means. Epidemiology, study the skin?
Well, it's epidermis? No, it's a lot of... It's involved with diseases.
Okay, all right.
And he's working with the Department of Health and pursuing his doctorate at the moment. Marie got her degree at the U of A, and then she went to Grant McEwen and did some work with music. And she's presently married and thoroughly enjoying life on about 10 acres of land out here east of Athabasca.
Oh, nice. So your kids are all close to you.
And
your grandkids, too.
And Alex is...
That's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Alex is spent 4 years at Augustana and environmental studies.
Mm-hmm.
And he's presently in the process of owning a tree farm and doing landscaping. So it's pretty nice having them all so close.
Yeah. It sounds like they found jobs that there's something they enjoy doing.
That's right, yeah.
Which is, I think, really, really important these days. You gotta like your job. You need to like your work. And I did. I like teaching. I enjoyed it. And even the junior high kids, I enjoyed. They're kind of the most, I don't want to belittle the younger ones, but the junior highs are more interesting a little bit. There was always more going on and more drama going on. And nowadays, the drama in junior high is... Oh, it just gets ridiculous with social media and all that
of
stuff.
Yeah.
Eh?
But there was, with me as far as the junior high, I found the curriculum in junior high was fascinating.
Yes.
You could get into current events and things with them.
Sure,
you
sure.
You know, which
yeah.
I'd always found sort of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember a favorite community dance or celebration or anything like that?
Well, the community dances when I was growing up in Collington were probably... there was a community dance to go to every weekend.
Is that right?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
At that time...
So everybody knew how to dance then?
Oh, yes.
And I have no idea how to dance.
We used to have dances locally, and then Doug Harold had a dance hall at Baptiste Lake, and that was a great place to go on a Saturday. Usually Saturday night, dance till midnight. Could only dance till midnight. That was before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just about every little community during the summer would have a picnic, which would be ball games, races, and whatnot, and then a dance in the evening. Everything seemed to end up with a dance.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just sort of the thing to do.
Yeah. Good socialization.
Well, that's... Yes.
And you got to meet lots of people. And
that's right. And quite a few card parties, too, in those days. And, of course, that's, too, when the card parties were often a way to raise money during the war for the Red Cross and so on. And that was the era of the box social. Now, do you know what I mean by that?
No, I don't.
Well, the girls and ladies, married ladies too, you all had to decorate a box. And then you had to make lunch for two and put it in that box, which would be sandwiches and goodies.
Mm-hmm.
The coffee was always made in a boiler on the stove.
Right.
You hid your box and you took it in, and it was placed up at the front. And then at supper time, there was an auctioneer, and he would auction off the boxes.
That's probably a good idea.
And it made for a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Now, the women would usually let the men know which was their box, their
yeah.
husbands. So that they, but it was great rivalry sometimes between the boys as to who would get whose box. And
yeah.
Of course, they wouldn't know whose they were bidding on, you know.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So... That was a fun thing to do.
Yeah, and a good way to, once again, meet people that you don't already know and get to know them better, eh?
That's right, yeah.
No. Well, I have one more question for you. What advice would you give your grandchildren's generation?
Well, my grandchildren are now all adults.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I guess the advice that I give them is...
Perhaps, what kind of advice would you give the kids of today?
I guess do your best and enjoy every moment.
Yeah, I think that's true too.
Yeah.
You have to live life It's the process. Yeah. You have to enjoy life is what while you make you're it. Living it.
Yeah, yeah. Life is what you make
it. Yep, and you get out what you put into it.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
What I find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can be a joy.
Sure it can.
If you want it to be.
It can be. Yeah.
Yes.
If you and we all have our hard times too, right?
Oh, but, yes. It wouldn't be life if you didn't.
No, that's right.
No.